whenever you are and however you happen to be listening. We are so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC, your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free, thanks to our sponsors this week, Brooklinen, Third Love, and Liquid IV. They're bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. And also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who's always my Valentine, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Jeff, was that a Spice Man?
He creeped in a little bit. It was the influence is terrifying, is what it is.
It's like the family's awake, so now we can do whatever we want. Is that what I'm hearing?
We are recording early this week to give ourselves a little Valentine's Day off, Valentine's
Day
evening.
Publishers the opportunity to release breaking news on Sunday. They don't need to wait until Monday.
Yeah. As long as they release as soon as we're done recording, that's the important part. So if anything breaks Sunday this year or this week, we won't be talking about it because we're recording early Saturday morning. To give ourselves some Valentine's Day off, but that doesn't mean we don't have tons to cover. We do tons to cover, and even better than that, we have an awesome guest to do it with. The DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian, but this week I am so excited because once again, DLC stands for driving lots of content because we have one of my favorite online streamers, the amazing Tim Trixler Frazier. Welcome back to the show, Trick.
Good morning. The way you started that morning, just I'm feeling it. Just yelling that makes me want to feel whatever you're feeling. And now I'm like, I'm full of energy. I don't need coffee.
There you go.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for letting me go on again. It's always fun to be here at the DLC and talking about video games and everything around it.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you back. We got a lot to get to. But you know what? The first time I really became acquainted with you was through the Heroes of the Storm community. Mm-hmm. And I wondered, I don't know how much you're still involved with Heroes of the Storm at all. Are you at all?
Dabble here and there. Yeah, occasionally play. It just depends on how Storm League is for the week. But
I was sort of wondering what your take this week. The BlizzCon schedule came out and there's no HOTS to be found on it whatsoever. Yeah. I wonder what your feelings about that were.
I think it's a bit of a bummer for those that do want to play HOTS and continually be there. I think personally, when it comes to balance, which is what I focus on for that game a lot, I think it's in one of the best states it's ever been in. I think the development team that has stuck there as the skeleton crew has done a really good job still making it a playable game that you really want to jump into and have fun. But I will say I'm going to be missing any new content because that's kind of what drives MOBAs, right? You log in to play the new hero, see how balance changes. So I'm kind of hoping they have some surprise that pops up. Personally, what I've been looking for HOTS, which I think would be great for a skeleton crew, and the assets already there, is a HOTS auto chess. I think that'd be really, really cool for them to announce. They have the assets, just find a game, balance it out, and I love those type of games. But what I think is really cool about Heroes of the Storm is the community that is still focused on esports, the CCL, other crews that are running a lot of tournaments, they are still pushing for that game to have a foundation for you to visit. And I think it's doing what it can,
Yeah, this last year has been really encouraging for the community rallying itself and creating all that content that Blizzard is no longer creating. And, those tournaments and it just feels like, man, I'm really disappointed that there's nothing on the schedule specifically for that game. It's still a game they support ostensibly. I mean, they're not supporting it to the extent they used to, but like you said, with a skeleton crew, but it is supported. There is new balance changes, new, updates. They've had skins and mounts and things and a new hero in the last year. So I don't know.
Good old Hogger. Hogger was fun. Yeah. In their defense, they released Hogger around the BlizzCon time last year because they had him ready to go and they wanted to push out new content. So hopefully they can just find something. One to two heroes a year is kind of what's chugging that game along. But even StarCraft was hurting a little bit too. I think this BlizzCon online is going to be a really rare experience for Blizzard fans because they couldn't have that authentic BlizzCon, which ultimately is about the community. They just turn it into a PR machine.
Right. Yeah, I'm still excited about BlizzCon, but you're right. It's going to be different having it virtually. It will feel more like a PR event rather than a community event, just by virtue of the fact that it's not about folks meeting in the same place and hanging out and doing stuff. So anyway, we'll be talking about that next week when BlizzCon happens. But let's get into the show. Let's talk about all the stuff that's been going on and start the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the week, it's the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week.
Story of the week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happen in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by giving us an email at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Love hearing from you. Love getting your feedback and all manner of things. You can also check out our Discord. That's 5x5 DLC on Discord. Or swing by our subreddit, which is also 5x5dlc.reddit.com. Great folks hanging out. A great community. I urge you to take part. But Trixler, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Actually, the Sherlock Holmes video game. Because before I came onto the show, I was unaware that it was actually coming out. So I actually got excited this morning reading up on this information. It does seem like there isn't much gameplay available. I did do some research, and at the end of March, they're going to have a gameplay trailer coming out for us. But I like the idea of doing an explore detective game that focuses on Sherlock Holmes and also gives us a little bit more of a different look at John Watson, which is something that I thought was really exciting.
Yeah, this was an announcement at the Epic Game Store Spring Showcase, because I guess it's spring now.
We're close.
February. But the Epic Game Store Spring Showcase was an event that the Epic Game Store had. Not a ton of surprising news. There's content for various things that were announced. But I would say that the new game or upcoming game that got obviously your interest and mine as well is this Sherlock Holmes Chapter 1, which is being created by Frogwares. And this is like young Sherlock Holmes, 21-year-old Sherlock Holmes. There is some combat in the game, like, you know, Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes style, punching and fisticuffs, but evidently not the main focus of the game. You'll be solving puzzles and doing stuff. Game looks really good. Unreal Engine 4 game. It sounds like you're excited about it.
I like the idea behind it. One mentioned the John Watson storyline. They said they want to do a bit of a different approach to John Watson. Like, you know who John Watson becomes in elementary, D.A. Watson, all that later on. But what happens when they're a bit younger and they're growing up? Like, that was played with a little bit on the show Sherlock that was on Netflix and the BBC. And I love that dynamic between the two. Also, they're going to allow you to fail at Sherlock Holmes, which was an interesting statement that was put there. If you don't find out the right information, you can accuse the wrong person and actually screw up the entire side quest, which is interesting because Sherlock Holmes always wins, right? Like, he always finds a W. So it's cool that they're putting Easter eggs and stuff and information that you can find out by playing through the Holmes storyline. But you can also fail it if you rush through and don't think things all the way through in a detective game, which is something that I feel like really isn't played with that much in a lot of games. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, Christian, I wonder if you're interested in this. I feel like the mystery subgenre, if you will, is a tricky one to pull off. It's not easy. You know, there's what I'm hoping this game is not is hold the Sherlock sense and look around the environment and see the clues. You know, I hope that they figure out a way to make it a little more where you actually do have to put things together and observe on your own without some sort of magical video game layer on top of it. But what's your take on this game, Christian?
Yeah, I was trying to Google the names of the last one I liked. It was a little more point and clicky story basedy, but there have been good Sherlock adventures on PC, I think is where I played it before. But they're not kind of realized the way this game is. As like, it kind of looks like it's a, you know, third person action adventure game potentially, right? Like Unreal Engine 4 and all of those things. And I do think clue finding and problem solving is hard to do well, but Hitman 3 did it so very well. And
I was thinking that too. You know, I was thinking like Hitman 3's level, second level, it's like chef's kiss on how you do a mystery game. You know, if I want a whole game just of that, you know?
Right. And while yes, there's fail states, but I'm going to be very vague. Like, you can wrap that up different ways, even if you don't have all of the evidence, and sometimes be surprised by outcomes. So I'm curious how this game will handle that fail state. Because like Trickster said, Sherlock doesn't fail, but like the fictional character Sherlock, but the fictional character Sherlock also isn't as dumb as I am. <It's> like, how do you get that wish fulfillment, but then also not have it be press X to Sherlock, you know?
Like, I know, that's the trick, right? That's the hard part in making games like this, is making it so that the player actually has to put it together, and there isn't like, you know, it isn't just spelled out for you. As long as you walk into the, if you walk into the corner and you find the footprint, press X to add it to your log, and now, you know, the in-game Sherlock makes all the connections for you. Like, you bring up Hitman 3, and that really is an extraordinary example of a game that let me make all those connections. But I think it's because the main goal wasn't to solve the mystery, right? That was just a thing you could do. So the game didn't hang its hat on having you have to do that. So perhaps that's the hard part, is like, if the goal is to solve the mystery and all the player wants to do is solve the mystery, you have to give them a path to solve the mystery that they can't get stymied on. I don't know.
Chat brings up Disco Elysium, which I think is a great example that I didn't think of.
That game is so good.
Yeah, like, it's, I mean, I'd be okay with that. Sherlock Disco Elysium. I think that'd scratch everything.
Yeah, I think this does seem to be much more, as you indicated, Christian, much more in line with the Robert Downey Jr. films, where he's sort of an action hero as well. It works. Those movies are fun. I enjoy those movies.
They're super fun, but they also kind of are the movie version of press X to Sherlock. Like, personally, and film and other types of media for detective stories, I like astute viewer or reader to be able to put the pieces together beforehand. If I remember correctly, I feel like in those Robert Downey Jr. films, super fun, but it'd be like, how did you do it? And he'd be like, well, what you didn't notice. And then you'd see a scene from a different angle and it'd be like, I never would have known that watching the movie, because you didn't show that to me, but apparently saw it. So we'll see. I mean, the character is a compelling one and one that's in the public domain. So, you know, I'm surprised there aren't more takes on him even.
Yeah. What about this last bullet point before we go off this topic, the part about truth and lies? So you can find out the information and accuse people, but you can also decide to lie about it because you think it will help the world be in a better position. What do you guys think about shaping up the entire world with that?
My husband Jeff introduces me every week as his friend.
Shapes the world, Christian. It shapes the world. I think that's cool. I mean, I like having ramifications, and any additional decision point in a game makes the game more interesting, as far as I'm concerned. So allowing you to actually come to a conclusion, but then decide that conclusion is not what is most appropriate or how you want to present the information, I think that's really a cool idea. You know, I think that's I want to see how that plays out in the course of the actual game, though, you know?
Okay.
What do you think, Trickster?
I'm okay with it all. I just want to see the gameplay in March, because I agree with you that the hold left bumper and the entire world display to you. You just play the game in that entire mode. Yeah, I didn't play Hitman 3, but a game that I just played recently, The Medium, I think even though it was linear and it's not the best example, it did a good job of when you hit that LB button, it's a little area of effect around you. So you actually have to explore a little bit and find things. And I want to have a little bit more tinkering and a little bit more minute adjustments to that. Because again, Arkham Asylum and Arkham Knight, it was just a little bit too much to be in that mode all the time. Make it a decision and then make it one that I can play off of. So I think I agree with you on that stuff.
Yeah, well, we don't have a release date for Sherlock Holmes Chapter 1, but they did say 2021. So, interested. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
So I added this just recently as we were sitting here talking, because I, you know, early morning, I'm sorry. But I want to talk about another thing, and I think we will. But I think to me, the biggest story this week, potentially going forward, is the Unreal talk, an Epic talk reminded me of it, is Unreal's MetaHumans. And it is a MetaHuman creator, which is a browser-based app, which is just mind-blowing. And you can create very realistic. You can, you know, of course, use art direction and make it not realistic, but you could do a photorealistic, a very close to photorealistic human being character design. And they can do it in less than an hour, taking something that used to take weeks or months, they say. It runs via the cloud, Unreal Engine pixel streaming. And then once you've created it, you can have this, what they call their MetaHuman, used in various rigging applications to get animations to work. And they list them all. This is beyond my pay grade. And then also, once you have those animations and everything kind of locked, they say that you can kind of map those onto other characters. So the way I see that is kind of like the NPCs are creating the crowd of people that, you know, don't need to have custom bespoke animations, and not every person needs to be whatever, like the faraway background in a comic book panel, right? Isn't going to have the Alex Ross attention paid to it, and doesn't need to. And so I feel like what this Epic MetaHuman creator is doing is really broadening who can create these high fidelity, realistic looking characters and get them up into games, caveat being you're using, you know, Unreal. And then they're released I don't know if they're out, but they released demos of two finished characters. And I think they're saying they're going to release two fully finished sample characters so people can use that as a jumping off point to play around with. I mean, one, these look incredible. Two,
put myself in everything. Myself in everything. I'm going to be every character.
Is that an official endorsement? Can we use your face on anything, Jeff?
Yes. Are
we
good? Okay. Put me in all of it.
I'm curious, like, your take on this. On one side, the way I see it, there's like the further democratization of making these what used to be very difficult to make games and characters. Huh. And on the other side of it, it's, oh my God, everything's fake. Like, we're not here right now. This is a MetaHuman mock-up of all of us. And like, the future is so scary.
This opens up a major can of worms, because personally, I'm this weird hater of like filters and stuff, especially everywhere on like Twitter and Instagram, and everyone just altering themselves so much that you lose who they are as people. Like,
that's
we're
how you know
perfect.
You're getting old, Trickster.
Yeah. Oh my God. I hate this. When I see a filter and like, I don't know, I just get into it. But it opens up another thing too that is becoming really interesting in streaming world, and that's VTubers. People are just putting out different personas now and living behind it. One, because it's easier. Your face isn't there all the time. Like, you don't have to be waking up every morning, being handsome, showering, whatever, doing the makeup, all that stuff. You can just put over a character model and just go to work in your pajamas. And that's kind of cool. And this stuff suddenly opens up this world of like, what if I just digitalize myself and then I V2 behind it? It's kind of me, but it's kind of fake. Like, how far do you go with it, right? And it's just opened up this entire world that eventually, like, when we get into VR and VR gets there and suddenly these are our avatars, like, this is cool technology. I'm just really questioning, like, how are people going to use it, and then where does it make sense to use? Because I don't like the animated VTubing too much, because I've thought about, what about if I go into VTubing? Because it is something that you should consider as a streamer right now. It's popping off. You have big streamers like Skara becoming a VTuber suddenly, and he's this big dinosaur model. But is the dinosaur model better than the human model of you, right? Like, it's an awesome form of technology. It really is. And I'm excited for it. I just want to know how far it goes. And like, when do we cross the realm of like, okay, we're using too many filters to not show off our imperfections or whatever.
Well, I wonder, Jeff, if this kind of leads us to the three of us get together and create an indie studio, and we can make a game that looks like The Last of Us Part 2, you know, like, clearly you still need skill to use these tools. It's not, we've all seen, maybe it's just me. I've certainly tried to create myself in game and then been like, oh no, this went horribly wrong. Like, why did my nose end up way up there? But, you know, like, I do think you're going to see teams that otherwise wouldn't be able to have this style of character in their game now be able to do it, you know? So Jeff, I'm curious what you think about like this tech being used for, you know, like the small indie studio now to go out and make a photorealistic looking game, you know, Last of Us Part Two, God of War, like style game with this technology that they couldn't do before just because of the human hours it would take. Is that exciting?
Yeah, I'm of three minds about this, right? To answer your question directly, I do think we're seeing that the engines themselves are doing so much of the work these days that we've talked on the show how the important thing at this point is art direction, right? The tools are there. You can create a spectacular looking game. It's now, how are you using those tools artfully? How are you, what are the decisions you are making as a creator now that you can really decide to create a game that looks like anything and they're likely going to look beautiful? And creating photorealistic NPCs easily, quickly is pretty amazing. It's a pretty amazing thing for a small team, somebody that wouldn't have a dedicated artist to be able to just, you know, just construct these assets. That's really cool. The second thing of my three-pronged reaction is what I said before. I can spend an hour, 2 hours making me, and then put me in whatever I want, right?
We can put you in Among Us, and we can all play Jeff.
I want to be Among Us. I want to lie to your face. or you can lie to my face, I should say. I when Fallout 4 came out, I spent all this time trying to make me. And yeah, maybe that's egotistical or narcissistic, whatever.
We all do.
But
it. It's
I like playing video games when I like the idea of having a virtual me walking around. I think that's pretty cool. Or maybe if not I'm, me, if so, for somebody else, you can create the avatar you really want, and perhaps maybe it can travel from game to game, and you can have this model independent of a specific game, but any specific game that's on Unreal Engine 5 could potentially use it. I think that's a cool idea.
That's super interesting. I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, if they said you can map the things over, any game that uses that, you know, I'm not going to use the right technical term, but like kernel or basic code, and you created this character, you could just import and not need to worry about doing a new character creation.
I love that idea. So you create this one ubiquitous avatar of either yourself or the thing you would want to play as, and maybe that can travel from game to game with you. I think is a fun idea. The third prong of my response is kind of what Trixler was talking about, which is it's real scary because you're gonna, you know, when you create a system where photorealistic humans can be very easily and quickly created, all of a sudden, you know, I'm coming to you live from, you know, a metahuman, a person that never existed, delivering information that isn't true in a space that is indistinguishable from real life. We are definitely going down that road of not being able to tell if a person is a person, if a person ever existed.
Spiky Chris in the chat mentions, you know, similar to deep faking, right? Where it's like,
yes,
oh no, here's a person that does exist.
Right.
Well, doing something they didn't do.
Also very problematic. But then you have these things where, you know, you have someone, saying something, and then we find out that person was never a person. That person never was a person, you know? That all that stuff is going to happen, and it's going to be very easy to accomplish. So there's a part of me that is trepidatious about our post-truth future, where, you know, people can look exactly like people, but they're an amalgamation of 400 different features that never occurred in nature. I think that there's going to have to be a reckoning culturally, globally, about how we deal with things that are not immediately identifiable as truth. We're bad at it right now as humans. So
it's so crazy how jaded we get about this stuff. Because like 20-year-old me would be like, yeah, that's so sick. That's so cool. I can fix my face. And now like the 31-year-old me is like, guys. Oh, yeah. Oh, guys.
Yeah. I know. That's the problem is that, you know, yeah, 15-year-old me was like, there will never be anything wrong with the global sharing of information. You know, like all this information will set us free. All we need to do is link all the computers together in the world and we'll be a utopia. And then it's like, the internet is not so good, it turns out.
Well, the good news is for the three of us, there's enough audio out there that not only could they make somebody look just like us, they could also make us say whatever they
want. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've experienced that so far already. Yeah. Just Twitch clips in general.
So, yeah, you know, I think it's cool. I think the tech is really cool, but man, I don't know. I don't know what's going to be done with it. And the fact that it's so easy. But I do think gaming application wise, it's going to lead to some really slick looking games and some cool characters in games. So, All right, before we get to my story, I want to thank our first sponsor, which is Brooklinen. Brooklinen is my sheets. Oh gosh, I love my Brooklinen sheets. How's your comforter? Excuse me. How is your comforter these days? Do you feel like it's delightful to plop into bed? Is it maybe a little lumpy? Could it use an update? Maybe a little deflated on you? Ah, does it no longer have the same fluff that you would hope for from a comforter? It's time for a refresh with Brooklinen. Whether you are up early like we are this morning recording this show, or you like to hit the snooze button, everybody deserves to sleep in comfort, and that starts with your comfort or comforter, as most people call it. Brooklinen can help you get your best sleep. They help me with my amazing Brooklinen sheets. I love them. I just crawled out of them moments before we started the show. And they also have comforters. You should check out the Brooklinen comforters. They create beautiful, high-quality bedding and home essentials, everything you need to get your best night's sleep. They work directly with manufacturers to give you a fair price. No middlemen, no markups, and the comforters come in lightweight, all-season, ultra-warm varieties to suit every type of sleeper and lifestyles. You can even find a weighted comforter for stress relief, which is great. I haven't tried those, but I hear they're amazing. They also offer a variety of materials, including eco-friendly recycled down alternatives. And Brooklinen's comforters pair perfectly with their sheets, pillows, and duvet covers. There's a reason that Brooklinen has over 75,000 five-star reviews and counting. Mine is one of them. I've told you many, many times how much I appreciate those Brooklinen sheets. It's like luxury, but without that luxury markup. So treat yourself to the ultimate comfort with Brooklinen's comforter collection. Go to brooklinen.com, use promo code SPICE, which evidently has changed. Our new promo code is SPICE. Use promo code SPICE, get yourself $25 off with a minimum purchase of $100. That's brooklinen.com, promo code SPICE for $25 off with a minimum purchase of $100. That's brooklinen.com, promo code SPICE. All right. My story of the week, you guys have left me some juicy ones to talk about. Boy, what am I going to talk about? I guess I'm going to have to talk about the video game movie casting news. We got some a big week. We talked a little bit about the Borderlands stuff last week when we're hearing this Borderlands cast come together. Kate Blanchett, Kevin Hart. Now we hear Claptrap has been cast. Jack Black is playing Claptrap, which, you know, every time I heard about Claptrap, people were like, who should play Claptrap? And then you joke, oh, Jack Black, obviously.
Of course,
and then they do it. You know, it actually happens. It's pretty amazing. And also, we got Joel and Ellie in the Last of Us television show that is happening on HBO.
We also got those other three background people in the Last of Us show. You got like the guy who walks across camera and makes eye contact down the lens. That's me. That's me that does that. It's just crossing and then. And then I keep crossing. I think, Jeff, you are man with hot coffee. And Trixler, I think you play excited boy.
I can do that. Excited boy. Excited boy. I'll shave the beard. I'll be good to go.
Man with hot coffee. It's not easy to get in The Last of Us either, hot coffee. I'm sure it's much more difficult in the post-apocalypse. Anyway, so yes, Pedro Pascal will be playing Joel, and Bella Ramsey from Game of Thrones fame, actually both of them from Game of Thrones fame, as Ellie. Trixler, what do you think of this? It sounds like video games are getting the comic book treatment. We've been waiting and waiting and waiting for video games to ascend cinematically to a level of not being terrible and actually getting, you know, A-list actors and kind of being treated with, I think, the same kind of respect that comic books finally were. It seems like it's happening. We're getting these big, big movies, these big, big stars. What do you make of these two different casting news?
We're being spoiled. And I love it. It's great. I'm glad that we've gone away from this idea of, like, find actors that kind of look like the video game characters. And just pick people who can act and let them own the character. I mean, we've seen it with, like, Robert Downey Jr. I mean, you mentioned the MCU. Everyone has owned their roles, and they don't look exactly like the folks that you saw in the comic books. And that's perfectly fine. Allow them to become the character and put their own stamp on it. I mean, Heath Ledger and the Joker. Like, Hollywood is finally realizing, just throw people that can act and let them take over the role and work together on it. And it's great that we're getting this. I mean, we had The Witcher last year. We're getting all these video game franchises that are going into different routes and just telling a story within that world, which I think is the best way to do it. Yeah. I'm a little bit nervous about The Last of Us because I don't know where they're going to go down that route. Like, the whole Joel and Ellie role has kind of been fleshed out between the two games. But at the same time, like, we know these actors and actresses are incredible. And if they can find an inkling of a story, you know these two are going to run with it and just give us something really, really special. Between this, Borderlands, and then, of course, don't forget about Lord of the Rings, which is being picked up for Amazon and being worked on. We are being spoiled when it comes to video games and good shows and people putting money behind it now. So I'm absolutely excited for it. And I actually think it's kind of funny, too, with Kevin Hart and Jack Black being together. We're kind of getting a Jumanji reunion if we just get The Rock thrown there as well. And then Karen Gillan. Like, it's over with. Like, we have a fun little show to watch.
I'm into it, too. I mean, Christian, I feel like you have some big thoughts about The Last of Us news, I'm sure. But I think we're finally at that point where these big video game properties are being, I would hope that the reason that these A-list actors are signing on is because the material is so good. And maybe that's where we finally are with video games. The adaptations are actually drawing this kind of talent because they're good.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the Borderlands has been, we've talked about it on the show, a franchise I used to really love. Borderlands 3 fell a little flat for me, not because of the gameplay. Certainly that addictive loop was still there, but because of the humor felt a, I guess it felt the same sophomoric, but kind of like, oh gosh, what's the full name of the New York Times Britney Spears documentary? Like, we were all bad people.
Yeah.
Like,
we grew up and the game didn't, is what you're saying.
Yes, that's a great way to put it. Also, watch that Britney Spears documentary now on Hulu. And so I'm curious how the film goes. Like, you know, I hope it is elevated. But seeing this just A-list actor after A-list actor after A-list actor signing onto it, I agree. It has to imply that, to me, it signals that this is a fun project and a good script. So I'm super excited for it. The Last of Us casting, you know, some folks were reaching out on Twitter as it was happening. I am 100% in. I 100% believe in the team behind this thing. Like, just look at the pedigree of the things they've made and full faith and credit behind this team. It's not like, I don't know, I have zero reason to have any concern at all with any of this. It's incredible actors, incredible talent behind the camera. I am so very excited. The only concern I have is that I'm so excited for it. Like, everything I hear elevates it. Also, Pedro has done everything I love. Like, can I?
He's incredible.
Can I marry him? Great. Like, can I? Like,
yeah.
He's funny online. He's like Ryan Reynolds is another actor where it's like, I love almost everything they do. And they seem like a fun person in the way that a celebrity can, you know, we can interact with them. Like, he interacts with his fans. He's fun on Twitter. He's an incredible actor. It just looks great. And I love that they have chemistry, right? These two actors already have spent time together in a difficult shoot, as the way I understood it, that Game of Thrones were difficult sets to be on, not because of the talent involved, but just the environment, the atmosphere, and where you were working.
I'm not sure either of them actually had any interaction.
I thought they were on the same. No, but I thought they were on the same season together. I could be wrong.
Same season, but I imagine different. Wildly different places in probably Europe, right. That they were, you know, one in Croatia and the other in, you know, snowy wherever they shoot that.
Yeah, that's probably right. But anyway, I'm super excited. I think they're going to knock it out of the park, and the talent and crew behind this show seems incredible. And again, yeah, we're past the point of like picking up copies of Wizard and being like fan casting, and it was always just like, what real person looks like this comic book character? And I think Trickster, your point was great about the MCU. A lot of those actors did not look like photo realistic versions of the characters in the comic books, but because those actors embodied those characters so much, they do now.
You we know, see them like, now as those characters.
Samuel L. Jackson is Fury.
That came from the comics. Samuel Jackson as Fury was Ultimate. Brian Hitch. Yeah, Brian Hitch, right. The Ultimates drawing him as Fury. And, but yes, but everybody else is applicable.
And now with the Avengers game, it's like they don't look like the people in the comic. And it's like, no, they do. They don't look like the people in the movies who are now the people in the comic. So I think this is great. And hopefully, you know, productions are safe and we can see these things soon.
What I hope about this most is the more we get into video games and comics and such being put into big roles, and when it comes to movies and TV shows, that the DC universe gets their stuff together a little bit. Like, sure, we got Wonder Woman, we had Henry Cavill as Superman, but there's been some major letdowns over here. We've had Batfleck. But overall, I want some things to jump out at us when it comes to TV shows. Like, Titans hasn't been that great. Like, it's there kind of a little bit. I'm just hoping that we can start to get on this track where DCU can find out what they want to do. Because their animated shows are amazing. Like, they're incredible. They're up there with the MCU. It's just fallen a little bit flat, except for, like, the Dark Knight trilogy. And then some of the older shows from the 90s. Because they did kind of pave the way for good movies. Like, we had our Tim Burton Batman movies in the past and whatnot. So I'm hoping DC Universe kind of learns from all this stuff, too, and grows with everybody. Because I want some more DC comics on my big screen TVs.
Yes, I think you make a great point about the animated versions, though. They are incredible. If you're interested in DC, you know, fully fleshed out, moving instead of static on a page, that's the place to get it, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, but yeah, I think this is exciting. I think it's exciting for video game fans that video games now are not the... We don't assume they're going to be horrible. It sounds like there's a chance these both could be really, really excellent. So I'm looking forward to them. Some other news I want to hit before we get off of it. One of the things that happened this week is we got a final release date, or hopefully final release date, for Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, which is really the first big exclusive PlayStation 5 first party game.
Finally.
Yes. Launch window, they said. Launch window. Now we hear June 11th, which that's a pretty big window. As far as windows go,
it's a beautiful home, floor to ceiling windows,
floor to ceiling.
It's not quite a Far Cry window, which we were looking at earlier. Far Cry 6 was delayed, and it said anywhere between April 2021 and March 2022. That's
an even larger window. That's panorama window. This, you know, but the console came out in November, and now launch window June 11th. I think that's a long time to wait for the first big exclusive to a console, I think, from a first party. I don't know if that's ever happened before. And, well, I guess that's not technically an exclusive. I mean, you can say
Spider-Man.
Demon's Souls. And Spider-Man, you can play on PlayStation 4, though.
True.
Anyway, I think this really does mark the first, like, big, fresh, not a remake game coming from Sony that's, like, only can be possible on PlayStation 5. It's a long time after the console has released, but also a lot of people still can't get those consoles. So I wonder if that has something to do with it. They don't want to put it out too soon because they got to get that install base up. What do you think about this, Trickster? Are you excited for Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart?
I'm excited. One, because when it comes to genres, this type of genre really hasn't appealed to me in the past. But Ratchet & Clank, I've heard a lot of good stuff about. So this is like the game that, like, I'm putting all my hopes and dreams on when it comes to the platformer, puzzle platformer, action-adventure game. One, it looks beautiful. Two, it's coming from a company that I love, Insomniac Games, especially after the Spider-Man franchise. Like, I fully trust them now for any game. They're going to get the next five games they release, I'm buying because of Spider-Man. Yeah. So this one is going to be one that I'm going to give a lot of love to and play. Also, Lana, who's been a guest on this stream a lot for you guys or your DLC, she's into Ratchet and Clank like crazy and is always like, play it, please. You got to play this game. So I'm excited for that. And then secondly, I want to use my PS5. Like, yeah. I spent forever trying to get a PS5. I actually had to have a stream viewer help me out. He got it and then sent it to me. And all I've played on it is Spider-Man. Like, yeah. Demon's Souls is there, but I'm waiting for a friend to get a PS5. He's been trying every day for the last 3 months. So I'm ready for something that I can just kind of sink my teeth into besides the Astro game that came out, which was a nice preview of what the controller and the game and the console can do. And finally just let it just unleash its capabilities.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. Ratchet and Clank coming out, it needs to come out sooner. I'm ready for it. Give it to me because I'm excited for it and I want to finally give this franchise a chance.
I think you're going to love it. I mean, the Ratchet and Clank games are so much fun. So pure fun, really, really just concentrated fun. I think you're going to love it. And this one just looks so gorgeous. And this rift mechanic just seems bonkers. But Christian, what do you think about this launch window business? Do we need to retire the phrase launch window? Because this seems like straining at the definition of that term.
Yeah, I'd have to guess that this wasn't the original plan when they announced launch window timing for this, right? I feel like we are still in such a time in the world where everything is moving.
So you're saying it was delayed. Another one up for the Kanata Meister. What did we decide my nickname was? I don't remember.
I thought we decided it's called this game. Didn't have a release date announced, so it can't be delayed.
Delayed.
but yeah, it does. As I was sitting here looking at my PS5, I think my PS5 was more looking at me because it's still so very big.
It hasn't shrunk in the last 2 months.
It's not that it looks you down. We're almost on month 5, right? Is March? I guess we're month 4.
Yeah, November, December, January, February. Yeah,
we're still in February, buddy.
I know, but so we're month 4. That's a long time. Like,
it came out end of November. So December, January, mid of February, we're 2.5 months.
Okay. Well, time is a black hole, especially right now, where it's like, yeah, man, this lockdown seemed really long. Oh, it's been a year. That is a long time. Also, what did I do yesterday? I don't remember. but yeah, you know, it hasn't felt like there have been a lot of great games driving these consoles. But like you both said, getting these consoles is super problematic and it's difficult. But also, they're selling about the pace as the prior gen. So it's like everybody wants them and there aren't enough of them, but as many people have them as they did prior gen releases of consoles. So it just takes a while for these install bases to build up. All of that rambling to be said, I'm very excited for Ratchet and Clank. June feels a long time from now, but I'd rather them take the time they need, have people be safe and make this game instead of trying to rush it out to hit some arbitrary pre-launch definition of when this game was going
to
come.
I also think it's necessary for them to have the time to develop these games because the PS4, especially in the year 2018, just delivered when it came to single player experiences, and everyone now is expecting that quality. So even though it is going to be out in June, I'm echo what the Spice Man said here is I want to allow them to have the time to finish this game and give us an amazing product, and I think they will. Like, I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with all that. I wonder how much of this was, let's get the install base a little bit bigger before this game even hits. I wonder how much of that. But either way, I'll be there June 11th with bells on, ready to play Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart. I'm so excited for that game. So, and what a deal for Sony to pick up Insomniac for what, like $200+ million, like that is a bargain for what they've been delivering to this console. Like already, like, you know, with between Spider-Man and this, it's all Insomniac, as far as I'm concerned.
Did you see the prices on those games? Is that the standard? I kind of just buy games now. Don't even think about it. $70 for a standard edition, $80 for the deluxe.
The new normal is $70 instead of $60. Yeah.
I think because there haven't been a lot of these next gen releases, people have forgotten that. And it did seem like it. And it's coming and you can pre-order now. Everybody's like, yay. Oh, wait. How much is it again?
Hard to swallow. Yeah. It gets a little closer to $100 a game. You're like, I'm starting to round up now, you know, in my mind. All right. Well, let's get to the games that we have been playing with the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. All right, Trixler, I know you've been playing a lot of stuff, but I want to talk about a game that both you and Christian have been playing. And it seems like it's the game of the moment.
Mm.
Valheim. Tell me about that.
It's actually an incredible little game, which at first you wouldn't think it was good looking. You log into it, and I don't want to say it's ugly. It's just not charming at first, and that charm grows on you, especially when you get into the world. I think they went the route they went because it's more of a defined art style. But you jump into it, and one of the great things about Valheim is the moment that you log into this world where you are in these... I think it's Norse mythology, I believe. Mm-hmm. You're a Viking, basically, is what I deal. I just run around and say I'm a Viking. You hit a tree, and then you level up instantly. And that suddenly just puts you on this entire track of like, oh my god, I gotta level everything up. And then you find out you can build, and there's a little bit of everything. There's something for everyone. For me, I like building and trying the boss fights, which you wouldn't think was in the game. But what about the game for you, Mr. Spicer? What's the play for you?
Yeah, so I'll back it out. I mean, I feel like everybody has heard about this, but in case you haven't, I'll try to zoom out to the forest a little bit. Valheim is a new survival game that launched on Steam in early access and kind of took the world by storm. I believe it's already sold a good chunk over a million copies.
Yep.
And it is, you know, you can picture Rust or that style of game, but all of the corners have been rounded. And I mean that to me in a very good way. Where it's up on my Twitch right now, which is twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. I played for like 2 hours with Lana and Chris Bergman and JP, and it's meant to be co-op. Like you can play solo, but up to 10 people in a world at a time. And did one of us die? Like maybe one of us died once and we took down the first boss and we had these fun adventures. And in Rust, you know, I'm dying a lot. You know, it's like you get hungry, you die. You're cold, you die. You try to swim, you die. And in Valheim, it's like you're hungry. Well, now everything's a little harder, but you don't die. You're cold. Okay, well, you're a little slower, but you don't die. It's really kind of rounded and smooth those edges, which I think makes it this fun, you know, where you can have these in-moment gameplay magical experience where Lana and I were trying to chase down this deer. And it took us like 15 minutes and the thing gets away. And it's just, you know, the most epic, silly, dumb little adventure we're on. Meanwhile, we take down the boss in like 2 minutes. And it's like, what? Getting this one deer was way harder. Like, what a silly, funny thing. And like building the boat and going exploring. So it's got all of those survival elements plus what survival games have as well, but also like the Minecrafty elements of crafting, building, getting your workbench, building your house, terraforming the world. And as you mentioned, the art style, it is like a PS2 style graphics, I would say, early PS2,
sure,
but with pretty lighting. It's not ray traced real-time lighting, but like really beautiful, cool lighting as the sunset comes up and it descends into night or storms roll in. So it's kind of got this very compelling art style where it isn't as bland as an old PS2 game, but also feels kind of like a nice warm blanket for gamers.
It's very whimsical, magical, yeah. Almost. It's like you look up to the ceiling and you see Yggdrasil, this huge tree above you, and you feel like you're in this magical world and you're there to uncover it and be a part of it.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I could name a half a dozen games like this. The Forest, Conan Exiles, No Man's Sky. I mean, there's like the list goes on and on. This is a very crowded genre with some very high profile games in it that you can play together. I mean, even the ship game, Xbox exclusive Rares.
Sea of Thieves.
Even that is kind of offering a similar experience.
So I have.
What about this game seems to have caught on? I don't. Is it just that it's a little bit rounded edges? Is that really the entire reason it's kind of the game of the moment?
Three things: rounded edges, And Trickster, I'm curious what you agree or disagree with.
Rounded Edges. I had two things, but you got three, so let's hear yours first.
A nostalgic, I guess four, a nostalgic art style.
I guess there's five things.
One more than Trickster things. Rounded Edges, a nostalgic art style. Lockdown is still very real, and people are looking for these communal experiences to play, and streaming oftentimes pushes to new experiences for audiences to kind of gravitate around.
Yeah.
And the last one is this game has a little more structure than some of those, and that there, I'm not there, but there are bosses that you go fight and defeat. And there's a thing that you can be doing and working toward, where a lot of times, because of these other games are more difficult to survive, that is the only thing.
Right.
And
right.
Valheim gives you something to work toward, in my opinion.
It's interesting. So it's kind of survival meets MMO a bit.
A little bit, yeah. That's what really stands out to me is how progression is baked into the game. A lot of these other games that we're talking about, the progression is baked in the knowledge that you find out. So you're running around, you figure out how to put things together, and now you suddenly have a gun. So therefore, you're stronger. In this game, you have basic stats, as I was mentioning earlier, that kind of progresses with you. So you suddenly get better at running. You get better at jumping, which is so funny to say. Like, I'm jumping level 7. But like, that jumping level 7 is actually a big deal. Suddenly, it doesn't cost so much on your stamina. So you can run further distances. You can get to certain places. So your character becomes a part of the world as you progress through it, as it would be like an MMO. So you naturally feel stronger just because you've existed in this world, which I think makes it more calming than the hardcore sense of like, you need to go break down barrels, find scrap, build a weapon. Then you suddenly have to defend yourself because you've built out a perfect infrastructure because there's PvP in a game.
Right.
This game has PvP, but you have to click into it. It's more of a PvE environment where you build towns with your other 9 friends. Everything is fun. Like me, my friends, we spent my first day 3.5 hours building a bridge. And it was the most difficult bridge I've ever built in my life. But I loved that bridge. And I checked it from every angle. I had that cool sunlight coming in. And we walked together across it at the end. We suddenly crossed across water without having to level our swim skill, because there is a swim skill in the game. So we're like, we just beat the game mechanics because we built this awesome building. So you get to become a tribe. And then if you want to progress, the natural progression of the game is going through the PvE and fighting bosses. Once you beat a boss, you unlock other equipment, which allows you to move deeper into this magical forest. So I think, as mentioned by the Spice Man, I keep saying the Spice Man today. I don't know why I'm giving this new tag.
Right, baby! You wouldn't want to do it early in the morning, and that's like the spice!
You invoke his name. Oh, the problem is if you say his name 3 times, he appears. That's the problem.
I'm down with it. But yeah, it really allows you to just move forward and be in a calm environment. And the second part is that calm environment is echoed by the music in this game. A lot of the music that is in a lot of these survival games is kind of like, you've been dropped in, here's a Miko Q, okay, now you just go do your thing and run around. There's nothing to back you up. There's a calming sense throughout the entire game with continuous music that is charming. It builds you into the world, and I think that makes people that aren't as hardcore into these games, that are like trying their best to survive and defeat everyone on the server, just be able to sit down and enjoy it. And it's come at a time where we're in a lull of games right now. We need things to play. So this huge survival open up in game that allows to you to cater how you want the experience just fits perfectly with a lot of people right now. I think it's just another perfect release for a perfect game at a perfect time.
It does sound like that idea of adding bosses into a survival game was a pretty inspired notion, because like you said, having something to work toward, for me, you know, I've played all of these. I played Ark, and you know, the list goes on and on. And at a certain point, it does feel a little meandering. Like it's wonderful to get on with my friends and decide what we're going to do. Okay, we're going to create a big building, or we're going to work towards some goal that we have decided is a goal.
Yeah.
But it's cool to have the game say, okay, here are the big signpost goals, right? You have to be this powerful to take down this thing, and you have to work together to take it down. I definitely motivated in MMOs to do that. I love that progression. I love working up to beating a boss. So marrying those two concepts together seems really answers the question for me of like why people have been playing this. Cause I looked at the screenshots. It's like, I'm not interested in playing that.
Yeah. It does not look like something you would play at all.
No. But I'm glad to hear you guys are digging it. Christian, do you think you're going to stick with it and play more? Or was it kind of a one-time hanging out with friends thing?
I want to play more. I want to play more with friends. So it's that difficulty of adulting, of finding time, of like when we can all sign in to play again. But it was super fun. Even the first time I played, I probably talked about it on the show before, I have a hard time falling asleep. So the first time I loaded it up, I was like, I'll check it out. Everybody's talking about it. And I played solo for a good 30, 45 minutes. I had no clue what I was doing because it is kind of that early Minecraft stage of the game. And Trickster, I think we mentioned this off air, but like the internet's going to internet. So people have figured out everything, but it's not like, here's the official guide necessarily. I was like, what's happening? Have I saved? What am I doing? How do I have rock. What is rock for? And it's like, it doesn't show you everything. It's not super obvious what to do. You know, it wants you to explore and experience the world. And so it was fun solo, but I definitely want to keep playing with, you know, with the crew and get people together. And hopefully it becomes a regular game night. It is, it's just such a good time. And I think Trickster's point about the music is great. It is, it just lulls you into like, oh, it's been 4 hours?
Yeah, it's right. One of those games. Speaking to another point as well, I think it nails the board game group feeling, which is where you have a group of like 4 to 10 people, and you're just there to hang out, and you're working towards a goal normally, or maybe playing against each other. I don't know what you do with your board game nights. But it's more of a calming community feeling. Another thing with these Rust servers or Ark servers or whatever, these other survival games, is it's got 60 to 90 people playing on these servers as well. So right. You can actually break off into different groups, and that causes hostility. But this game says, pick 9 of your friends and survive together. And that, I think, brings you together a little bit more and allows you to just kind of just enjoy the moment rather than trying to compete with everybody, which I think is another big win for it.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Because I definitely have felt that on big servers where you're like, oh, I got to keep up with the Joneses, or I got to, mm-hmm. There's danger from other people, or all of that stuff. It doesn't feel as, you know, all for one, one for all with, that you might find on a smaller group of folks like this. That's a good point.
And because of that, there's safety bringing your character into somebody else's world.
Yeah.
Or it's like, unless you know them. So it's kind of like an Animal Crossing, like make them a best friend. Cause if you do, they're going to come in and mess up your island. Right. And here it's like, oh, Trickster's playing. Okay. Does he have friendly fire on? Okay. No. Yeah. Okay. Well, I know what this is going to be, I'll bring my cool character over, run around, show some things that I can do, play around, hang out, and then I can bring my character back to my world. And it's not, I'm going to lose this character in this Rust world forever, and it's been thousands of hours of my life.
Yeah. All right, before we get to the rest of your playlist, Trickster, let's talk about our second sponsor, which is Third Love. Hey, you know, Valentine's Day has come and gone, but you still have a chance. If there is a woman in your life, or if you are a woman, and you need a new bra, treat yourself, treat your loved one. My wife absolutely loves her Third Love bras. They are designed to be the perfect fit. And the truth is, so many women are wearing ill-fitting bras because the process of purchasing a bra is ridiculous. I've never done it personally, but it is, by all accounts, broken. Third Love has fixed it. They have the perfect fit promise, and they stand behind their products. If you don't love your Third Love bra, you can exchange it and return it for free for 60 days, even if you end up returning the bra, which chances are you're going to love the bra anyway. But if you decide to return it, they actually wash it and give it to women in need. It's pretty amazing. It's a wonderful way your conscience can be clear, even if you find yourself not perfectly happy, but chances are you will be. My wife now has multiple Third Love bras. She absolutely enjoys their high quality, comfy styles. And the thing that they do is they have this fit finder quiz. It's a very simple, just a few questions. It takes about 60 seconds and you find your perfect fit. Because most women aren't sure about their sizes, over 15 million women have taken the quiz to date, which means they've perfected it, giving women the perfect fit. You can identify your breast size and shape to find styles that fit your body. It matters a lot when finding the good fit. And all of these bras are quite comfortable. They've got memory foam, no slip straps, and scratch-free bands. I don't even know what any of that is. My wife just tells me these are the only bras she wants to wear. So that's why I'm happy to recommend it to you. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone. So right now they're offering listeners of DLC 10% off your first order, go to thirdlove.com/DLC now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 10% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/DLC for 10% off today. All right, Trixler, what else is on your playlist?
I got a few games that I've been jumping around between, so I'll talk about them real quick, and you guys can ask questions if you want. Mortal Kombat 11 is actually incredible. I know it's a bit of a gory, brutal game that we all know about, but hey, it's arcadey. Mortal Kombat 11 actually delivered for me, because I actually watched my parents play Mortal Kombat 1 and 2. Like, I was actually young enough for all that kind of stuff to watch them play it.
Play it. Oh my God.
They actually played it, and
old.
and I enjoyed watching as a kid, obviously, Blood and Guts. Oh, cool. And then I watched the first two movies, and then I haven't touched Mortal Kombat since then. I remember there was like a spiel on N64 and PlayStation, never really got into it. This game, not to spoil anything, but it goes through all the history of all the other Mortal Kombat 11 games and then kind of rewrites it a little bit. And so it's a perfect time to get into the Mortal Kombat world. And it's actually incredible. It's like playing, watching a movie with you fighting in between the scenes. And it's super fun. So I highly recommend it if you want to check out that kind of stuff.
Just quickly on this, friend of the show, Sean Kittleson. Nice. And then also play 10, because, I mean, it's weird now but 10 retcons all of the first ones. And then 11 starts like the new story of it. But yes, gotcha. Absolutely incredible game. And it's so fun. I love it.
I was surprised at how much fun I had. It was an absolute blast. And it's a good like 15 hours of content with the DLC. Like, it's totally, yeah. it's high tier. I still can't believe how amazing it was. Yep. And then I finally am now 400 years late to this Among Us craze. I started getting into it with like sheriff mods and proxy mods. It's a lot of fun. So if you guys are still playing that and you want to play with me, feel free to invite me, because I want to play with people. And then Star Wars Battlefront 2, I have gotten back into, because Epic had it be free last week. You still have to download the Origin launcher, which I don't know if I'm allowed to flame it here, but I kind of hate that launcher a lot. It's kind of one of the barrier entries to me playing Star Wars Battlefront 2, but it's still a fun, good game. For like an hour to 2 hours at a time, the development team that worked on it after the whole EA Reddit fiasco, where the game just got blown up, deservedly so, because of loot boxes and all the money they were trying to pull from us. Now that the game does not have that stuff, it's all built in. Progression is in the game now. They finally just completely made it a game that you can play without spending any money whatsoever. It is a fun experience that captures Star Wars perfectly, and I highly recommend it for anyone that just wants to have a night out with 20 on 20. You get to be Darth Maul and you go against Imitri. It's incredibly fun, and you got to try it. I don't know if you guys have played it before.
Back when it was released. Yeah, I haven't played in a long time, but this is another example of those games that launch poorly, people get all upset, and then later on, you know, the teams keep chugging away, and now there's some good sentiment around them.
Yeah, it's gotten to the point where the development team is done. They might have some updates here and there regarding balance, but they are now down to a skeleton crew. But the work they put in for the last year and a half is warranted, and it's worth your time. I just wanted to point that out for anybody, for
that's great,
anyone that's had their eye on it.
It's interesting, because I think this week, evidently, according to some report, EA was going to make a decision on whether they were going to continue to support Anthem at all, whether they were just going to kind of let that game die, or if they were going to put out that big update that they've been talking about that was going to revamp the game. And I think, you know, Star Wars Battlefront 2, obviously a much bigger IP, maybe a little more skin in the game, maybe a little more incentive for them to keep working on it than it would be with Anthem, which is an original IP. But I think it's proof that, you know, if they're allowed to continue to iterate and continue to support these games and fix the things that folks don't like, they can eventually arrive at a product that's pretty fun to play. And I certainly hope they continue to work on Anthem. Well, I guess we'll find out soon, but interesting. Anything else?
Yeah, so these are the games that I actually love and wanted to talk about. Auction Not Included. I don't know if you guys have ever played Auction Not Included, but I stumbled upon it last year in 2020. I think it came out in 2019. And they recently just put out a DLC that's kind of streamlining the entire experience and making it more fun for Rocket gameplay. But the idea is that you spawn these clones in the middle of this huge asteroid, and you have to find a way to survive with them and dig your way out. And it's kind of like a 2D setup. It's incredibly fun. It will take your brain and make it very wrinkled. So if you have smooth brain syndrome like myself, your brain will grow wrinkles playing this game. I'm not lying to you. You have to deal with science. You have to deal with heat. You have to deal with electricity, plumbing, all this stuff. But what's so great about it is the cutesy approach that they go with it. I think Clay Entertainment does wonderful stuff. They did Don't Starve Together, Ninja Game in the past as well. They do a really good job of presenting games and making them fun and having a lot of baked difficulty into it that isn't overwhelming at a first glance. And Octonaut Included really delivers on that front, and it has DLC coming out. And I just want to push this game because I think everyone should be playing it. I'm surprised not everyone has picked it up because of how easy it is to play and then how hard it can become if you allow it to be something that you want to learn and really dig your fingers into. It's just such a great game for putting hours into. I discovered it, I think, around October last year, and I have over 130 hours into it.
Wow.
And that's pretty crazy for me because I variety stream. I jump all over the place with games of like 5 to 8 hours at a time, and this game has caught my attention just like Don't Starve Together. So
I have not played this. It's too bad. This episode will come out after the Steam Lunar Festival or Lunar sale is over. It was half off during the Lunar sale on Steam, so you could have gotten it for $13 or less than $13. Oxygen Not Included.
Yep.
I've not played this. Looks like something I would dig.
Let me buy this game for you. I'm not kidding. It makes me so happy to buy this game for people and then come back and, you know what? It's pretty okay game. Like, that gives me a happiness. Also, Clay always does sales. Like,
yeah.
If it's not on sale right now, wait a couple of weeks. And with this DLC constantly being iterated on, because they're not done with it yet. It's an early access DLC. They're still adding more programs and more technology and whatnot. I'm sure that they're going to have a major sale once the DLC is completed. So keep it on your wish list.
Is this the same devs as Don't Starve? Is that?
Yes. Don't Starve Together, same devs, Clay Entertainment.
So is their next game like We Out of Water? Or like what are we looking at here?
Don't Starve, Oxygen Not Included. Somebody please, I'm parched over here.
When I pulled the
I can't blink. Next game is called I Can't Blink.
I actually went to go answer your question because I didn't catch the joke at first. No, it's Grifflands. Griffin's coming out. That was a pretty good joke.
When I pulled the screenshot just for stream for this, I watched some video, and it seems like it really strikes that nice balance of like calm but chaotic, if that makes sense, where it's like
it does.
Everything's going to plan. We're having so much. Oh, no, not like this.
That's exactly it, actually. You'll be playing, thinking you're in a good spot, and the next thing you know, your polluted water gets into your water system, and suddenly your characters are eating polluted food and getting sick poisoning and vomiting everywhere, and you're like, oh, what did I do wrong? And then you have to figure out how to restart and fix it all. Like, I love that type of game, like roguelites and things like that, where you kind of learn stuff as you go and then start off from the beginning and then try to make sure you put out the fire before the fire starts. And this game captures that gamely perfectly. Like, this and Hades were my favorite game to play in 2020.
Oxygen Not Included. Grab it. Sounds like a grab it. But I can't let you leave, Trixler, without talking about Little Nightmares 2.
Oh, God, I'm so happy with this game. So you've played Little Nightmares 1, right? You both have? Yes?
I have, yeah.
Did you play it?
I have not. It was one of those games that's like, I need to play this.
These games kind of fall into the category for me of like Limbo, Inside. They're side-scrollers with just presentation, just pushed to the max. They are there to put you into the moment. Atmosphere is what they do well. And I was nervous about Little Nightmares 2 because I felt like Little Nightmares, the first one that came out, was just like a really awesome experience, but I didn't know if they could replicate that. Kind of like how I was scared of Ori and the Blind Forest 2, Ori and the Will of the Wisp, and they delivered on that game, by the way. Little Nightmares 2 has taken everything that I enjoyed about Little Nightmares 1 and then just exceeded my expectations beyond belief. It's gotten creepier. They've added a little bit of combat in as well. They have made it to where you are walking through a vent and you're scared for your life to get out of that vent. And more interactions just in general, which has made me very, very excited to push this title because Little Nightmares 1 was one of my favorite platformers to ever play in the last few years of playing platforms. It's like Ori for me, Inside, and then Little Nightmares, and then nothing else comes close, really, when it comes to capturing atmosphere.
Yeah.
And this game has been delivering. I've been doing about an hour and a half chunks at a time, and I think I'm about 7 hours, and I don't even think I'm near the end of the game. Like, they wanted to really make sure that they put their foot in the ground when it comes to making these type of games, and you guys got to pick it up, every single one. Also, hats! There's hats for everybody! Everyone loves hats in video games!
You gotta get those hats!
You gotta get them!
I've heard very good things about Little Nightmares 2 from others as well. And I don't know. I mean, the whole, like, it's even scarier than the first one to me. Dissuaded me a bit from jumping on it, but hearing how effusive you are about the game makes me.
I don't want to say scary that. In terms of the sense of, like, it goes in the way of, like, gore or Resident Evil. Right. Scary in the sense that the characters...
Like, really scary.
scary in the characters that, like, if you were a child, it's like, wow, this person that I have to face off against, what is their goals? Like, it terrifies you of what they're trying to do. And I think they nailed that entire aesthetic.
Yeah, my five-year-old is terrified of it, but I'm going to make her finish. It's like, you started it. You're, no, just
oh, my. You gotta, that's good. That's just good parenting, Christian. You know, see it through the end. Little Nightmares 2. Very, very cool. Christian Spicer, what's on your playlist?
We talked Valheim. There's one. I'm going to talk some Warzone for a little bit. And then, Jeff, there's a game that we've both been playing that I'll pitch to you first, and then I can chime in. But I jump back into Warzone, stream some with CheapyD a couple days ago from when you're listening to this. So you can still find that up on my Twitch as well. One, I still am awful at this game. Two, I love, and I think we've talked about it some in regard to Fortnite, but I love the narrative and world building that I don't even want to call them battle royales, but like live service free-to-play shooters are doing with like Apex and their new season and how they're bringing characters back, Valorant, and how when they introduce their new characters in Warzone, even for a game that isn't narrative heavy, for kind of how they lean on the nostalgia of that franchise that's been going forever, right? I mean, it feels like it's been, what?
15 years.
Since 4, right? Like, I'm like, 4 is kind of the start of the new genre of COD, but that was already the 4th, or I think 5th if you count. Those are like brothers and whatever it was. There's a lot of them. But I really love how Call of Duty leans into its recent nostalgia and then goes back and picks up other characters. And they are still doing this world building within the game. And so what Cheapy and I played... It's, I think it was new in December, so not brand new, but it's the Trio's playlist of Resurgence on Rebirth Island, which is a smaller map. Maybe it's newer than December. It's new-ish to the game. I think it's still only available playing in threes, but you're able to respawn until you get to the final circle. And at that point, then it kind of goes back to more traditional battle royale moments, which I'll be honest, we never made it there. So I'm not quite sure what happened. But it's a smaller map and it's much faster. It feels like a really cool mix of traditional old school, like Modern Warfare style multiplayer speed and size map with this battle royale component that they've added to it, where you respawn and you drop into the map and your parachute's out and your boots on the ground versus in the bigger Warzone style, I'm able to go minutes without seeing anybody. You know, we're going after this bounty. We're going to go do this thing. I'm going to go find this, explore this area. And if you want, you can avoid people. And Resurgence really brings you into the fight. And because it has respawns, it doesn't seem as punishing in terms of like, do we want to go? I don't have a good gun. I don't want to go get into this fight. It's like, no, there's a group over there. Here we go. And let's find out what happens. And it's a 30 second timer. So there still is some risk reward, right? If your whole squad gets taken out, you're done. But if you're able, one person's able to stay alive, it's that 30 second clock until they come back. And we had a moment when we were playing when I was the only person in our group alive. And she was like, just stay in there, stay in there, stay in there. 5, 4, I'm almost back. 3, 2, wham. And I got killed. It was just like that fun stress of the moment of like, I'm good. Yeah. There's nobody around here. You're going to be back in a minute. And then we're right back in the middle of this thing and then out. So I really love seeing, again, I think Call of Duty is a franchise that could really rest on its laurels. And it's kind of like we talked about Battlefront. This game keeps getting better. And they keep putting in the work to make it the behemoth it is. Tons of problems with cheaters. So I'm not going to ignore that. Like, there's work to be done, but a really fun game that I think is worth checking out again. I know it's 100 gigs of hard drive space, but if you haven't played Warzone in a while, there's a lot to like and a lot of other modes and gameplay styles to play.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Call of Duty Warzone.
Yeah. Why don't you take us over to my favorite 3D world?
Yeah. Super Mario 3D World came out on Switch alongside Bowser's Fury, which I guess is the new bit of content or the new spin on this Wii U game that I played through on Wii U. I'll be honest with you, Christian. I picked this up because of my son, because he has been obsessed with the Super Mario 3D Land on 3DS. I think I mentioned on the show before, I bequeathed my 3DS to my son. He's been in 20 minute screen time chunks, basically every day. In the morning, he wakes up, he's like, "Daddy, can I use up my screen time for today? I want to play 3DS." So he has been getting better and better. He's 4 years old, blowing me away with his ability to play Super Mario 3D Land. But he's, we completed that game. He's been going back and, there's all kinds of crazy stuff that opens up. Cosmic Mario opens up, which blew his mind. and, now some of the mushrooms that pop out are purple, so they're bad for you. Daddy, there's bad mushrooms now. Anyway, so he's been going back and replaying the levels over and over and over again. Because as a kid, you can play the same level 400 times and still want to. So I figured, what a perfect setup for this new game that's come out. I'll blow his mind. We'll be on Switch and we can play together. And that's been the real hook, is Daddy puts it on the big screen and we play together, and he can pick, he likes playing as Toad, but Daddy has to play as Mario because Mario has to be involved. It's just, he's not going to play as him.
That's the rules. Yeah.
Yeah. We've been having so much fun. I mean, this is a fantastic platformer. Boy, it looks great on Switch. I mean, it really looks beautiful in that Nintendo way of it's not metahuman Unreal Engine 5 people, but the vibrant, beautiful, great lighting. It doesn't look like a last gen game at all. I the cat suit was a big hit with the kid, like blowing his mind. We can play, you have cat suit Mario, and those levels are fantastic. And the vocabulary of the game, I think, is much clearer to my kid and to me, frankly, than Odyssey. I think Odyssey was an interesting step forward, but the vocabulary of that world is a little muddled to me, and is why I hold Odyssey sort of lower in regard than a lot of other Mario games. This is classic Mario vocabulary, where you're on an overworld map, you're selecting which one to go to next. You jump into that world, you have optional stars to collect that are harder to find. You have a midpoint flag, all of that stuff that was already present in 3D Land that my son now understands as the vocabulary of that play style translates perfectly. So it's been like a one-to-one. The only really new addition in Mario World, 3D World, is these Toad levels, which got spun off into its entire own game, but are those rotating, you play as a little spelunker Toad and you don't get a jump anymore. You have to walk up ramps and find stars and in order to get out. Completely baffled my son. He didn't like it, didn't enjoy that, doesn't understand the rotation of the map. All of that is a new impediment to him. Not a fan of those levels, but
and just
everything else.
Quickly, when you said new, it's new to 3D World versus 3D Land. Like those levels were in the Wii U version of 3D World. The
I'm comparing it to 3D Land, which is useless to 99% of our audience because I'm playing like an old 3DS game and comparing it to that. It's just been recent in my life, so that's why I'm making the comparison. But you're right, not new to this version. If you played the Wii U version, I played through the entire Wii U version. I completed that game back whatever year that was, but these levels all feel fresh to me because I don't remember the details of them. And it's fun to revisit. These are fantastic platforming levels. This is a great game. And chances are most of the people that have Switches didn't have Wii U's.
Yes.
Because we know the numbers on that. So I'm sure it feels new even more to those folks. So easy to recommend Super Mario 3D World.
Yeah. I would argue that it is frustrating at times when Nintendo re-releases these Wii U games at $60. I hear that. I really do. I would also argue that most people have not played 3D World. And so if it is a new game to you, like if you've played it, it's maybe a little harder to recommend at $60. If you haven't played it, it is so easy to recommend. In my opinion, there's going to be a little like I'm not trying to use a trick as a word of a sleight of phrase here, a word of phrase, what I'm looking for. But I think Super Mario 3D World is the best 3D version of 2D Mario, if that makes sense. Like, I love Odyssey. I love Galaxy 2. But what 3D World does is, it's like you said, Jeff, it embodies that classic Super Mario Brothers 3 Mario World approach, but makes it 3D and plays with those conventions in really fun ways. But at the same time, it is a discrete level that you are playing with. And like you said, the vocabulary of how you explore them is easier. That said, I almost recommend, if you have the disposable income for it, I almost recommend the purchase price just for Bowser's Fury. We're recording this early, so I have not finished it. My, you know, regular recording time, I'd probably be done with it by now. I don't know if you spent any time in it, Jeff, but it is phenomenal. The fact that this is like a add-in thing and that they didn't flesh it out a teensy bit more and make it Super Mario 3D World 2 or something like that, like, it feels fresh. The levels that are in there feel just as original and unique as in 3D World. The addition of Mega Bowser is cool, and like this omnipresent threat that's going to show up. The storm blows in and how that changes the world when you're in it. And it changes the vocabulary a little bit of 3D World, where instead of discrete levels and an overmap, it is an open world, but again, with discrete hubs. So you're in this open world, open map, and you can kind of see all these little islands. And then when you go to them, that can start the experience of collecting the cat shrines, I think they're called, on that island. But you're also not punished just for leaving. It's not like you're out of the play area. So it feels both fresh but familiar for building on this 3D world experience. And again, I am blown away that it's like the pack-in, so to speak. Right. I love it.
Not to like spoil or anything, but how is the Mario versus Big Bowser? Is it like a kaiju battle overall? Like how does that play out without like going too hard into spoilers?
Yeah, it's a boss battle, if that makes sense. You know, they change as you go, I'm imagining. I have not, like I said, finished it yet, but it's you find the way to hit him 3 times.
Okay, gotcha.
But it's really fun. So this would be it can happen fairly early, but it's really cool as you become Big Mario, which is in the trailer. And to be walking around this open world with these little islands in it that have these things that you were just climbing on, and now you're just like stomping over this thing that required 3 super jumps before. It's really cool.
Okay, cool. I love kaiju battles. So I did see that like trailer, and I've always like kept an eye on that. I figured like it'd be a nice month to watch Godzilla versus King Kong and then play that on the side, and I think that's what I'm gonna do. That seems perfect.
Have you played any of this with your daughters, Christian, or with anybody else?
Not yet, only because of the early record time, and my youngest is blasting through Pokemon Sword on her own, so she played all her game time on that, and I was like, well, I'm definitely still gonna play this. Sorry, kids. Yeah, this is dad's screen time.
I love the implementation of the multiplayer. Like, you can have up to 4 people playing through this game together, all in the same map. We're following the first player, and if the camera moves away from everybody else, you turn into bubbles. Can be a little frustrating for a 4-year-old to not really understand how that works. But overall, I think it's phenomenal and easy to recommend. And I'm excited to get to Bowser's Fury. We haven't even touched that yet, but my son is obsessed with Bowser and the various iterations of Bowser. In 3D Land, all the boss fights, I think, were very cleverly not boss fights at all. It's just you have to run past Bowser and push a button on each of the times you fight him to drop him into lava.
Again, like the old school 2D
like
Mario.
The old school ones. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and Bowser Fury is totally standalone too, Jeff. So if you wanted to, when your kid's asleep, you know, you can just pop into it.
Right.
It's really nice.
Cool. So that's Super Mario 3 World on Switch, which just released. Also on my playlist, I finally got around to finishing the last few missions of Hitman 3. Yeah. Dude, that game is extraordinary. And now that I sort of grok what that franchise is about, I'm tempted to go back and play through 2. Also because you can import that content into 3, which is pretty rad. I don't think it ever, for me, reaches the highs of Mission 2 again. Like, Mission 2, I talked about at length on the show, is the one that's basically Knives Out or Clue
It's the one John Woo directed, Motorcycles. It's really good.
It's a parlor mystery that you participate in. It's phenomenal. It's one of the best video game levels I have ever experienced. It is that good. I think it's a masterclass in game design, that second level. But all of the levels are really fascinating. There's a level in China that is wild, that it starts in this huge city that is dark and mysterious, and it's got all these twisting turns and alleyways. And then you get sort of underneath that city and into a secret lair, which is fascinating. There's the final level is a giant winery, which is sprawling, and the storyline of how you complete the murders, or how you can complete the murders, is twisting and wild. And
I think that's the second to last. I have never said what the last level is because it's
second to last.
Yeah.
It is changed my opinion of this franchise.
Was your opinion beforehand kind of poor on them? Because like I've tried a little bit of Hitman and I never got into it.
That's how I was. But I hadn't even really tried the last two iterations of it because I had tried Hitman way before and was just like, this is not for me. Nothing about this is interesting to me. And I'd stayed away. And I just tried this one. I was sent a code. I was like, I'll give it a shot. I know Christian's super high on it. And the first level, I was like, yep, this is why I don't like these games. This is exactly the feeling I don't enjoy. And then the second level, I was like, oh my God, I understand now. It's like the clouds parted and the ray of sunshine hit my face. I was like, I get it. I get these games now. I get what the fun here is. And it is playing in that sandbox. It's them giving you this extraordinarily detailed environment with so many nooks and crannies and things to find and little bits. And it's all just set up as opportunities. All of the entire thing, you know, for me, stealth in general, unless it's done in a very specific way, but most stealth games I find just to be sort of uncomfortably anxiety inducing, stressful in a way that I don't really want. You know, I'm just like, I don't want to be discovered. I don't want to be discovered. That feeling doesn't feel particularly good. I enjoy stealth in games where I'm using it as an advantage, like in the later Assassin's Creed games where it's like, oh, I'm using stealth because I want to use stealth right now because it makes me awesome. But a lot of stealth games, it's, you know, that feeling of, wait, oh yeah. God, I didn't want something caught, wrong.
And then it resets and a black screen.
I'm nervous just hearing you do that. You know, like that's right?
That's the sound, right? That sound epitomizes why I avoid games like that, is because I just don't want to feel, you know, oh no, I don't want to feel that way. But what I realize, and Hitman has that, a lot of that. Luckily you can save anywhere. So you like Christian says, you can sort of save spam, but more than that, it becomes this like opportunity to be creative. And I'm constantly impressed with how many opportunities there are to be creative. There are very obvious things that the game presents to you of like, well, this could be a fun way to murder somebody. but there are all kinds of wild edge case options. You know, there's just the amount of detail that they put into these environments, the wild places that you can discover that all seem to make sense, right? These more than most games, locations in Hitman 3 seem to be living, breathing places. They seem to be, they have an internal logic. Things aren't arbitrary. Everything works together and to create a little biome, a little habitat that seems to actually have smart people going about their days doing things that you can then mess with in really fun, wacky ways. And when I started approaching it like that, where it really is more of a puzzle game, it's more of a sandbox than it is, how do I get through this most efficiently, right? Stealth games, my mind space tends to be, how do I get through this without causing any trouble for myself? How do I get through it as quickly as possible, without anybody noticing me? But this game allows you to really take your time, explore, find out stuff, set things up for yourself. And once I clued into that and really relaxed into it, I had so much more fun and I grew to appreciate what these games are actually going for.
Yeah, I think Trixler, as a, you know, a variety streamer as well, I think this game really works for streaming. It's kind of pitched as a narrative-based game,
yeah,
but the fun and the shenanigans you can get up to in like engaging with your community as you're playing to like create your own challenges. Oh, which reminds me, I believe Min-Max, their community challenges are now live in game and kind of funny.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
Kind of funnies are coming soon. Maybe now when you're hearing this, and it's like literally the game kind of did that, right? Like both awesome shows, great communities, but they created these challenges and these things to do, and they're part of the game. And so, you know, at a big level, I love that IO Interactive does that, and shout out to those folks at Min-Max and Kind of Funny for awesome content that's being brought into such an incredible game. But also on the micro level, you can just do that with your own community. It's like, all right, what are we going to do today? Cooking instruments only? Okay, I hope I find a pan. You know, and you can engage in the levels in really fun, controlled chaos.
Sounds like I just need to put a little bit more time into it, because you guys, it seems like there's a moment that it just sparks. And then once it sparks, you just get really inspired to try different things.
I mean, honestly, second level of Hitman 3. I know I keep saying it over and over like a broken record.
It's the play. That's the way to do it.
It's so awesome. I mean, if you like Sherlock Holmes, if you're looking forward to a Sherlock Holmes game, play Mission 2 of Hitman 3. I guarantee you will go crazy at the level of delivery of what that they create an actual mystery game. Like you're playing Knives Out. If you like the Knives Out movie, it's Knives Out the game. It's okay. Unbelievable.
I'm adding it to my calendar. I will do it. Hitman level 2.
You can jump right into it. I'd play the training if you haven't played any of these first three trilogies, but sometimes it's frustrating. Jeff and I were talking offline of like, where's just continue? And the game's kind of not built that way. You can load your save, but as a new player, Trixler, you can come in and just start on that level.
Okay. Yeah, there's no gating at all. Yeah, it's pretty wild that they even allow that. It recommends. It's like, hey, if you want to know what's going on with the story, you should probably play this first one. But
you don't have to.
You don't have to. Yeah, you don't have to.
I'm in. You sold me on it. I'm gonna give it a try. Level 2.
Honestly, it's the last thing I expected to be talking about this much this year is how much I love Hitman 3. I truly was uninterested at all in playing it. And here I am thinking it's maybe the best game I've played all year. So it's pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, I just want to mention real quick, I'm back to playing Immortals Fenyx Rising. And you're probably going to hear me talk more about it over the next few weeks because I'm going to finish that game. And it is pure joy, pure comfort food for me. If I want to put on a game that's just going to make me feel good instantly, Immortals Fenyx Rising, I can do a few missions. I can do a few puzzles. Mission, there's no missions. There are quests, but I can do a few, you know, I spend 20 minutes in that game and I will come out of it feeling happy. I love that game. I'm literally have created a statue of myself in the world at this point. It is a game that rewards you constantly for everything you do. Everything is fun. The world is vibrant. Every new area that I open up is really awesome and vertical and has really fascinating and cool geometry. Man, I love that game. I love it. I think it's so, so underrated. Immortals Fenyx Rising.
Also,
I have a question. Oh, go ahead.
I think as of right now, and maybe while you're still listening to this, it's like half off or 20 something bucks.
Yeah, a steal at that price.
I guess my question is, does the writing get a little better or was I just being too judgmental? Because I started watching it and I felt like the voice acting was kind of all over the place and the comedy that they were trying to hit just wasn't really resonating with me. I watched like an hour and a half on another stream, and I was like, after playing Ghost of Tsushima, I think I'm going to just go ahead and pass on this game.
I mean, it is that throughout, right? And that is either it hits for you or it doesn't hit for you. I like it. I think it's goofy sort of dad joke humor.
Sure.
And I'm there for that. Some of the jokes don't land. Others of the jokes I'm genuinely tickled by. I think that, I mean, there's no like guffawing, oh, this is hilarious, but it's amusing and it's fun. And I like the light tone. It is a departure from like you said, the Ghost of Tsushima's of the world, or the numerous, almost every other game takes itself super seriously. I like games that don't, because they're rarer. You know, it's less often do I find a game that's attempting to make me laugh. And I think this one, yes, a lot of times the jokes don't land, but I think it's charming. There's this wonderful narration that's happening throughout that I never got sick of. So I don't know. It's a taste thing, right? And I could totally see. Yeah, I could totally see anybody going, those are kind of groaners. I'm not down for that. That's totally fine. For me, it works. And I like the fact that the game is trying for that. You know, there's fewer games that do that. So
I think that's the beauty in open world games is like when they find a theme and they just push it all the way through and they have the full floor to play with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I've been keeping my eye on that one because I have a couple other friends that really say it's amazing. Seriously, just give it your time and like it'll jump up to you. And
For me, it's pure joy. I jump into that game. I'm having fun instantly. I'm doing things. I feel there's no waiting around. I'm not sitting through cutscenes. Mm-hmm. It's just, I'm in, I'm doing great things. I'm having fun. I like games like that, you know? Anyway, I could go on a whole rant about how you should, the way the games present themselves. Like the medium really frustrated me. You brought up the medium, really frustrated me because like, what am I even doing in that game for the first 2 hours? You know, that I'm not doing anything in that game for the first 2 hours. And then finally the game arrives. But just get me into the game first. Get me into the game. Let me experience the game. Then unveil your grand storyline. I don't know. That's just my preference.
Did you get to the finale of that game, by the way?
I did not.
Okay, interesting.
Did you?
I did. And I don't want to like spoil or anything, but I kind of hate how it ended. It's one of those open-ended, like, what happened? Did this occur or did it not occur? And what is the best way? Well, you, the player, decide. And I feel like that was a game that was so linear that you need to finish your story for me so I can have the closure that I need in that game, especially about a game that deals about death, right? Like, so it kind of frustrated me how it ended. But I felt like what they were trying to do, which was obviously go back to the Silent Hill games and give you a story almost Alan Wake-like, I think they delivered on that front. I just wanted that game to just give me an ending. Let me know how it occurs.
Christian, it sounds like they didn't go all the way. They just stayed medium.
Nice. No?
He nailed it. I think you're the first person to make that joke.
Trixler, if you like that joke.
Why do I like Immortus Phoenix Rising? Writing? It's a mystery. You know, we may never know why I enjoy that game. All right. Let's thank our final sponsor, which is Liquid IV. Oh my gosh. I left my bottle of Liquid IV in the other room. I've been loving this stuff. Oh my gosh. Liquid IV. One of the things that I vowed to do in this year, 2021, we are more than a 12th of the way in to 2021. It feels like a new year still, but we're already in it. And I have decided that I'm going to treat myself better this year. My body, you know, after 2020 of just sitting around being a mopey pants, I'm going to treat myself better. I've been working out more. And part of that is staying hydrated. People don't give enough emphasis to hydration. Liquid IV has helped me stay hydrated. Why? Because drinking one serving of Liquid IV provides the same hydration as drinking 2 to 3 bottles of water alone. How is that possible? How is that possible, you say? Well, allow me to answer. Liquid IV uses something called CTT, which is cellular transport technology. What is that? Well, it's the optimal ratio of glucose, sodium, and potassium delivering water and nutrients into the bloodstream. So this hydrates you quicker, is more effective than just drinking water. And I feel it. I feel more energized when I drink my Liquid IV. But the best part is, the very best part is, it tastes good. It tastes good. Boy, I don't enjoy flavored water very often. And Liquid IV is a packet that you empty into water, right? So it's just flavored water, but it actually tastes great. It has about the same amount of sugar as an apple. So, you know, you're not just pouring sugar into your water. And it tastes delicious. They have a variety of flavors. My favorite is the acai berry. They also have strawberry. They've got a lemon lime that's delicious. Boy, I enjoy it. And I don't really like products like this very often. So the fact that I like how it tastes is huge. Grab your strawberry liquid IV or whatever other great flavor you like in bulk nationwide at Costco. They're available at Costco in bulk, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use promo code DLC at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order when you use promo code DLC at liquidiv.com. Get better hydration today at liquidiv.com, promo code DLC. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Trixler, it's been awesome having you back on the show. It's always a delight to talk to you.
Thank you, man.
Where can we follow all the things that you do online?
Well, if you want to follow me, my two favorite plugs right now are my Twitch, which is my main source where you will find me at least 6 to 8 hours a day at twitch.tv/Trixler, Trixlyr. And I've recently been getting in the YouTube game. On it for a couple of months now, and I'm having some decent results. But if you're trying to find more of a specific game or specific content, like if you like Hearthstone Battlegrounds, I've actually been putting a lot of educational content out there, which is one of my favorite auto chesses to play right now. You can find that at youtube.com/Trixler as well. And then if you want to, you can follow my Twitter as well. Don't really do anything. I talk about video games there. Sometimes I post pictures of food. Yeah, it's whatever. But you'll find my streams. And if you want to check me out, those are the places to do so. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I love being here. And anytime you guys need a guest, feel free to give me a ping.
Awesome. Well, we love having you. So that'll certainly happen a lot. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Well, this show, if you want to catch it, I usually stream when we typically record Sundays at 7:15 p.m. Pacific time, twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. You can find the Valheim and Call of Duty Warzone streams up as well, and hopefully some more Valheim streams coming soon, but life has a way of preventing most of those from happening. This one, the first 30 minutes were me trying to figure out why my audio wasn't working. So it was pretty chill. It's the pre-game before the game.
Those are the best streams, troubleshooting. That's great.
Yeah. It didn't sound fun, Jeff, because we couldn't hear anything. But otherwise, it was very fun. The sound was literally no fun. And then I have a new newsletter for this year, which you can find at tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer, and there's an archive up as well. The last one was about Stadia, which I think we missed. I think it was ended up being a blind spot for the show where like the news broke like right after we recorded, and then it was a whole week before we came back. But I kind of talk about my feelings of Stadia's slow march toward death that everyone predicted and told me.
Yeah.
Despite my glee for the platform. And then Twitter, you can find me at Spicer, Spicer.
Very cool. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And I've got some other shows for you if you want to check them out. Hear me talk about movies and TV shows over on the Slash Filmcast. You can find that at slashfilmcast.com. Great show. A lot of fun. We also talk about science. You can learn something and laugh along the way with my comedy science show, We Have Concerns. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. And if you're sad that football is over, I got news for you. Football is not over. There's a brand new football league that is started this weekend. First games were Saturday. It's awesome. It's called fan-controlled football. It's like Madden in real life. It's completely controlled by the fans. They call the plays. They decide the players. It's insane. And the owners of the teams are celebrities, including one team owned by Kind of Funny. Greg and the group have the Wild Aces, and I'm doing a companion stream to that show. It is called something new every week, but you can find it on Thursdays at 2:30 p.m. Pacific time at twitch.tv/FCF. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do.
Trix Lord, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I do. I have one for physical activity because we all know the last year has been a pain in the butt for everyone, me included. I wouldn't say I was a gym rat, but I enjoyed going outside and lifting a weight or two and feeling like I was mildly strong. And that has gone completely. So I've actually, just to save my insanity because I need something to do and also to try and be a little bit fit, been picking up yoga. And I've been doing it with Yoga with Adrian, which actually as recommended by Lana, because I was talking about yoga and I was finding videos. And she's incredible. I find her not to take it too seriously, but serious enough for me. A couple of jokes here and there in the middle of the segment. And I find that I've actually been able to rest myself a little bit in the morning, get my thoughts together, be a little bit more clear, and then go about my day. So I recommend Yoga with Adrian if you're looking to be a little bit more fit and maybe kind of get your mind in the right place before you start your day.
Yeah, and you can find that on YouTube, right? That's where you're
right on YouTube. Yoga with Adrian. It's spelled with 1D, A-D-R-I-E-N-E. And she's wonderful. She has a whole
program. She is wonderful. My wife and I did one of her courses for a while. We kind of fell off of it. We're going to go back. You're right. She's delightful and makes it easy and calming. It's great. Christian Spicer, what about you? Parting gift?
Yeah, I'm going to stay on the fitness trend. New running shoes. They don't need to be running shoes, but athletic shoes. As a former very serious runner, this was something I would be better about. And now as a old, body broken recreational jogger at best, it's still important to replace your gear. We talk about replacing our graphics cards and everything else, and shoes wear out. You don't need to buy the most expensive shoes around, and also, unfortunately, whether you wear them or not, they wear out. But I'm not saying every 4 months, whatever, but like, think about it. Think about the last time you replaced this tool that is the barrier between you and the ground, and it can really save you from injury, make your runs more enjoyable, all of that stuff. Think about replacing your gear. I just recently bought Gel Nimbus 22 Retro Tokyos because they were on sale and because they were awesome. They're Asics. I've run an Asics since my college days. They have a foot box that fits me right. But check it out. Think about, how old are these things? And you might be due for some new ones.
Very cool. I usually, in the parting gift segment, recommend something that I've enjoyed that you will enjoy. And I've done that 370 some odd times. I'm going to use this real quick, if you'll indulge me, to recommend something that maybe is a little more self-serving. I do a Cameo account at cameo.com/Jeff Cannata. And I make limericks for people over on the /Filmcast. Every week I do a limerick as a review of the movie that we're reviewing that week. And I really have a lot of fun with the limericks and people enjoy them. So I've started selling those limericks on Cameo. I hope you'll give it a shot. If there's any reason you would enjoy a personalized message from me and a personalized message that might include a limerick, I'm over there. You can hire me at cameo.com/Jeff Cannata. I've done almost 100 limericks on Cameo so far, and I have tons of 5-star reviews. People really enjoy them. You may not know me as Limerick Guy if you only listen to me on this show, but it's a really fun way to give something to a loved one. It's a great gift. Or even treat yourself to a message and a limerick at cameo.com/Jeff Cannata. Thank you for allowing me to do that. All right. We also got a listener-suggested parting gift. This comes to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Sean Williams, who writes, "Hey, everybody, I wanted to recommend a comic book called We Live by the Miranda Brothers. It's only on its 4th issue so far, but it snuck up out of nowhere in late 2020 to be one of the best comics I've read all year. I don't want to spoil the plot, but the basics are the world is about to end, and a brother and sister need to get to one of the few places on Earth with a way to escape the planet. The story has similar vibes to The Last of Us, with some shocking and violent turns along the way. So be warned, it's not as kid-friendly as the covers might make it seem. One of the things that truly makes We Live stand out from other comics is that each issue has a QR code that takes you to a YouTube page that features one of the panels from that issue, along with some original music composed just for the comic. The music is beautiful and haunting and adds another dimension of emotion to the book. We Live, written and drawn by the Miranda Brothers, published by Aftershock. Thank you from a fellow gamer dad, Sean." Thank you, Sean. awesome. Did you know about this one, Christian?
I'm aware of it. I haven't read it, but it's Aftershock is the publisher. And I'm a big fan of a lot of what they publish. Yeah. And this book does look absolutely gorgeous. So it's on my backlog. I haven't been able to pull myself away from the new DC Future State stuff. But I've heard only great things about it. It's supposed to be incredible.
That music portion sounds amazing, because I feel like music is a way to really get the emotion to go to your heart. And if you are reading the comic while listening to that music, that sounds like such an experience.
Yeah, I think that's a really inspired idea to score your comic story. What a neat idea. Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Trixler and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to all the folks in our chat room hanging out with all of us live and watching on video. We appreciate all of you. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for making those awesome bumpers. We appreciate you for your hard work. Thank you. And to each and every one of you that listens to us each week, that downloads us and puts us in your ear holes, thank you. We'll be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.